Pacific Road, Phil Hendry.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show when we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. Later on tonight, Vernon Dozier, the high school educator, the teacher who was with us last evening, has asked for an opportunity to talk to the father of the young lady who took great exception to his opinions on George Zimmerman in the social studies class there at Belmar Academy. And he will do just that. We're going to have Brett Buford on, the father of Karen Buford, and the teacher and the parent will go at it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhendryshow.com. That is our live streaming video of our show, the video cast we call Phil TV. You can get a backstage pass and watch that. Thousands of hours of archive material is there as well. And speaking of things that, well, not speaking of, but introducing the topic of things that are free, we have a podcast coming up, a free podcast, a Phil Hendry podcast very soon. 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, forgive me, I don't have the exact date. But it nonetheless is a momentous day. It is the day that Osama bin Laden was neutralized, killed, if you will, terminated with extreme prejudice by members of the United States Navy, specifically Navy SEAL Team 6. This was the more I read about this, and I don't know if how much you guys have read, but the more you read about this operation, you got to sort of be impressed a little bit with Obama, because not that you wouldn't be impressed with him otherwise, but maybe even a little bit more, because here's the thing. He had Robert Gates against the idea, Joe Biden against the idea. People were weighing in for a surgical missile strike of some kind. People were weighing in for some kind of an action that would force the people out of the compound. Like, believe it or not, they were thinking of stink bombs, things like that, to force everybody out of the compound and take everyone prisoner and not kill anyone. And there were a myriad of plans that were presented to the president, and it was he. And he alone that said, no, we're not doing any surgical strike. We're not doing any stink bombs. We're not doing this. We will go with the Navy SEAL plan. So I think there's some people that may think, you know, Obama, you know, is always Mr. Liberal, ultra careful, anti-military kind of a guy. Not necessarily the case. Bobby Dooley is joining us here on the line from the Western States Homeowners Association. A member of Angels on Our Shoulders, which was a big group supporting the candidacy of President Obama. And joining us now as we look toward the first anniversary of this particular day when bin Laden was taken out. Bobby, you, as a supporter of President Obama's, obviously you're very happy. As an American, we can all look at this anniversary as a good thing.
Oh, I think so, Phil. There's no question that as a supporter of Barack Obama, I was hopeful that a new president, a Democratic president, a progressive president, would roll back the role of the military in U.S. foreign policy. I was hopeful that we would not have to put men in harm's way, or men or women in harm's way. Although, as a member of Angels on Our Shoulders, I think it's important to be clear. I think clarity is very important. And honesty. And so when I say that we're putting men in harm's way, we really are putting men in harm's way.
But we have women in the military.
We do, but I don't think it's honest. It's not in keeping with the policy of our group to say men and women in harm's way, because it really isn't. But that's beside the point. The point that I'm trying to make is it is a proud day. And there's nothing really the Republicans can do about it. They're angry. They're upset. They have been making statements about how President Obama should not be using the killing of bin Laden in any political way.
I think that they were saying, Republicans in the story that I've got here, and yeah, it's from Fox News.
Well, right there, it's you're going to have some bias.
But nonetheless, Republicans fired back Friday after President Obama's campaign released a web video touting the president you know, okaying the bin Laden raid and suggesting Mitt Romney would not have greenlit the historic mission if he were commander-in-chief. In a statement circulated Friday evening by the Republican National Committee, Senator John McCain said that it diminishes the memory of September the 11th and the killing of Osama bin Laden by turning it into a cheap political ad. Obama's Republican rival in the 2008 presidential campaign called it shameless and pathetic.
Well, I think that that is, I think that's going to be expected from John McCain, and I think it's going to be expected from the Republicans to take any, you know, just facing the reality of what was done. When it had to be done and someone had to do it, and they had to get in and they had to do the very tough work of going in and killing Osama bin Laden. It was President Obama that, as they say in the military, he's the one that pulled the trigger on this deal. And I think it's a little, it's not very becoming, I don't think, of the former Republican presidential candidate to start to, you know, sort of beat his fists on the wall and kick his feet and sort of wiggle around in the high chair crying.
Well, the high chair. I mean, do you think he's being childish?
Well, it sounds a little bit like, believe me, I'm a mother, and when I hear someone sort of scrunching their face up and crying and wah, you know, that is really what we're hearing from Republicans. And I think it makes them look bad. I think that, to be perfectly honest with you, I think it makes them look bad, and it also you sort of enjoy it a little bit, seeing just how petty they can get.
Bobby Dooley with us here from Angels on Our Shoulders, a group of people that supported very much the candidacy of President Obama in 2008 and do in 2011 or 2012. And, you know, all hail President Obama is your message as we lead up to the first anniversary of the death of bin Laden.
Well, I think he's the one that gets the credit. There's no way that you can't just acknowledge and accept that it was a Barack Obama, and I'm not going to apologize for that slip.
Well, people do it though, and it is kind of an embarrassing slip, you know.
Well, no, it isn't. I mean, I've heard too many people apologize. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. You know, I made a mistake. So, you know, people are going to have to live with it. I think that this was an operation planned by Barack Obama, and
it's not that difficult. The difference between the two names is not that. But Barack Obama is our president, Osama bin Laden.
I understand that, but I don't want to give people all this, you know, ammunition for going, oh, ha ha, you know, because what we have leading up to the anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden, there's a lot of hurt feelings, and a lot of your Republicans are going to get. They're going to get ugly and say things that maybe they don't mean. And we just want them to know that we're here, we're on guard for it, and you can't get away with it. President Obama is the one that pulled the trigger on this. He's the one, as you said, Phil, he's the one that greenlit the SEAL operation. And the other ones, you know, that they wanted to do.
Well, the other ideas that they had.
You said that they wanted to do a missile strike?
Yeah, the other ideas they had was a missile strike, and there were some other limited, more limited and more long-range or more technologic ideas they had for taking out this man. Joe Biden was against the operation, and Robert Gates, and both of them felt that it was going to fail. They thought, especially Gates, felt that it had a very high percentage. It was too high a percentage. I don't know what you call it. It had too much of a percentage of failure built into it, or something.
Well, not built into it.
Well, yeah, I know. I don't know how those guys say these things, but I'm drawing a blank.
It had a very high percentage of negatives, I think you could say.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ms. Dooley. A high percentage of negatives. He thought, Gates thought, that they stood to lose people, meaning SEALs, and they stood to, there was a very good chance that bin Laden wouldn't be there, you know?
Well, this is why, you know, Barack Obama's president of the United States. This is why he's president. When you're president, and the vice president is worried, and the secretary of defense is worried, and this person's worried, and that person, and everybody's worried, and everyone's saying no, 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 no. When you're the president of the United States, you have to think more clearly and see more clearly than anyone else. And Barack Obama, I think, you know, I just think it's a really embarrassing, this is going to be a very embarrassing couple of weeks for the Republicans. Because Barack Obama showed a clarity of thought, a commitment to, you know, the neutralizations of the, you know, the enemy combatant, which in this case was Osama, you know, bin Laden. And so the neutralization is what I was looking for, is what they do when they kill.
Yeah, they. Well, there's a lot of fancy words. They killed him.
Yeah, they killed him, but it was not, you don't go, oh, I'm going to go kill him. You say, there's going to be a neutralization, or I got to, you know, I have to, what did you say about being prejudiced?
It's a line from Apocalypse Now, you know, terminate with extreme.
Yeah, terminate with extreme prejudice, exactly. And my husband, Steve, was telling me that, right, Steve?
Yeah, well, they'll terminate with extreme prejudice, but they do. And Republicans didn't do it. Republicans never did it.
Well, but that's what they did. And this is a call that a president makes. And this is why so many of us were proud of President Obama on that day and will be again on the first anniversary. And this is why the Republicans are sort of rocking their high chairs back and forth. And I'm sorry to use that term, Phil.
Well, I think it's a little bit, it's a baiting term, and it may not be applicable when you say rocking their high chairs back and forth. You know,
I'm telling you, I'm a mother, and I've seen it, and I think they're being a little bit childish with this.
All right, Bobby Dooley with us here as we talk about the first anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden, President Obama using the news and using his administration's decision to kill Obama in the way, or kill bin Laden the way that they did, being used for a campaign ad. And the Republicans have reacted very negatively. Bobby Dooley is with us saying that the Republicans, you know, they just have to suck on it. There's nothing they can do about it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll take your phone calls for Bobby Dooley from Angels on Our Shoulders as we talk about the first anniversary of Osama bin Laden being killed by the U.S. Navy SEALs. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Bobby and Steve Dooley with me here. Ms. Dooley was the chairman of Angels on Our Shoulders, which is still a active group supporting President Obama in his reelection efforts as you guys were active during 2008. You wanted to mention this Marine Corps story?
Yes. There is a Marine that has been discharged from the Marine Corps for criticizing President Obama on Facebook. I think that is very... I think it's very unusual. The first year anniversary of President Obama making the courageous call to go in and take out Osama bin Laden. And now a Marine is on Facebook criticizing the president. I really have to ask myself, who's putting him up to that? Because I don't think a soldier, especially in the Marines, is going to make comments about the commander-in-chief in that kind of context, unless he's being paid or otherwise is being, lured into it. I just think it's the timing is really weird, and so it's just one more dirty trick, I think, on the part of the Republicans that isn't going to win.
Now, what about the idea of politicizing this at all? When they said that President Obama used this in a campaign pitch. He was politicizing it. And now you're on, and you're bashing the Republicans.
Well, they were bashing him, you know.
Yeah, but they were bashing him for using the event as a some kind of a political springboard. You know, what about that?
What's wrong with the president pointing out the very positive steps that he's taken? You know, this was a man, President Obama, that was criticized by people as being, he probably would be anti-military. I know that I was not, I wasn't really expecting him to be as, you know, pro-military as he is. So, and a lot of people said that, you know, his lack of experience there was going to be a disaster. And, you know, they said that he hadn't been on that that committee for Afghanistan. And there was a lot of things they said about him, and it all proved to be wrong. And meanwhile, the Republicans, you know, they didn't kill Osama bin Laden. Barack Obama did. So I just think that they've got to sit there and they have to accept it and not say anything. And I think they're coming out and saying the things they did say really, you know, was, I thought just, I can't help but use the comparison. They reminded me of a baby rocking his, you know, his high chair back and forth.
Yeah, they're just all screaming.
They're just all screaming and stuff. And I thought it was, I just didn't think it was anything that made them look good. And I, you know, if I was a Republican, I wouldn't know what to say either.
Well, I can tell you a lot of Republicans will say the following. They'll say that,
Well, are you going to say that, you know, that this was part of...
Let me finish, okay? They're going to say that the Republican administration of Bush...
Yeah, you're going to say that they're going to take credit for it.
Well, a lot of what went into planning this...
That, well, yeah, a lot of what went there, that was way back in 2008, okay?
Well, I'm sorry, sir?
That was back in 2008. They got it in 2011. That's 3 years into Obama, so a lot of that didn't do it.
A lot of the surveillance work that they were doing was during the Obama administration. So you really can't even give President Bush that much credit. You can give him this much credit. You could say that he was the guy that said, "Oh, we got to go get it. You know, we got to go get Bin Laden."
Well, that really isn't, you know, the whole story, because the work that was done on beginning to track this guy commenced with the Bush administration. There was a mention today in an article I read that there were four pillars, so to speak, that they built their bin Laden hunt on. And one of them had to do, I think, with family. Another had to do with money. Another had to do with the courier. And I believe that that was itself that CIA analyst that came up with these four pillars, whose name is not being released by the CIA. I think that was during Bush's administration.
But you don't know for sure.
Yeah, you know that. You know for sure whether or not that was a Bush or was Bin Laden.
I don't know for sure, but I mean, look, there was 4 years of this during the 7 years of this during the Bush administration, and 3 years of it during the Obama administration. Well, I just have to think that there'd be a higher not a higher percentage, but at least a significant contribution by the Bush era CIA. Not that there's any difference, you know.
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? I mean, it's essentially the same workforce of the CIA. Although we do have a different director.
Yeah, right there. That's right there.
They have Leon, I forget his name, Leon Panetta.
But that's a different director, and it may mean differences in terms of, you know, I don't know, emphasis on this over that, or perhaps they're going to, you know, hire more people or maybe fire some people. I don't know, but it's the same people that are working in those cubicles over there at the CIA looking at this data.
What about the people in the safe house? That's what we want to know about, the safe house. And I don't know if you're familiar with these terms or not.
Yeah, I know what a safe house is. Yes, I am.
Okay, you know what a safe house is? When they neutralize.
When they neutralize what?
The safe house.
What do you mean they neutralize the safe house? They neutralize a guy?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. From the safe house.
All right. Hold on for a minute, because we're getting into some strange, I don't know, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on who gets the credit for killing Osama bin Laden. Bobby and Steve Dooley are saying, Republicans, just shut up and suck on it, because this is Obama's party. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Will be right back.
I like how you put that. It's Obama's party.
Phil Hendry.
Keep doing that. Some kind of a parade should be had for President. President Obama is at least honored in some kind of military parade as the man who, you know, really had the guts. I think more than anything else. Can you turn that down, please? Yeah, turn it down a little bit. I think it's President Obama that had the guts to say, you know what? All of you little old ladies in here, and I know he didn't say that, but.
Well, who's the little old lady that you're talking about?
Well, I think that Gates and Biden both said, oh, you know, we're worried, we're nervous. And I think that at some point, and you saw President Obama, they also said to him, you shouldn't do that dinner, that state dinner, the night before. And he basically said to them, you know, all of you little old women, you go and tend to your knitting.
Yeah, but they had to man up.
And, I mean, he manned up. And next stop, there's a coffin being loaded onto an aircraft carrier. Thank you.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's get a call going here. We also have General Galen Shaw is going to be giving us a call momentarily. And we have Dave on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Dave. You're on with Bobby and Steve Dooley.
I can't believe this guest of yours, the way she's talking. It's as if that President Bush never looked for Osama. The military never looked for Osama, that the CIA never looked for him, but all of a sudden we have a president change, and President Obama's over there kicking up the sand and looking for him. No. Do you think that President Bush, if he had specific intel, wouldn't have gone on to get him? I know he would have. I flew missions over in Iraq during the first Gulf War. I worked in a command post, and I interfaced with people from Joint Chiefs of Staff. And that information is shared constantly, up and down, and we're always looking for high-value targets, and those targets were given out. If President Bush knew specifically where Osama was, I guarantee he would have gone after him. We didn't know specifically until President Obama was in office.
That's my point.
No, you're implying that President Bush never would have gone after him. He would have.
Well, what I'm saying is that Obama. Well, I think that President Obama is the one,
Let's get some boots on the ground. The military and the CIA did all the work for
boots
him.
Boots on the ground.
He's the one that said we're going to use the SEALs. And we're not going to.
Of course. Who else are you going to use?
We're not going to blow it up.
Who else are you going to use? And President Bush would have done the same thing had he known it.
He was being told by the others to use to blow it up. And he said, "Let's use the snails." And that's what they did.
But we're not arguing that you're giving President Obama all the credit for getting him. The only reason he got him is because the military and the CIA found him finally. Mm-hmm. But that process was going on for years before President Obama became president. You can't give him sole credit for finding him and killing him.
Don't you think it's possible, though? Give
the credit to the military and the CIA that finally found all the leads. Yes, President Obama
gave the order to go, just like any president would have done. The method
is what you're
trying to elevate to some
bigger
status.
I think President Obama's the one. Now, look at it this way, Dave. President Obama's the one that said, you got a safe house? Yes, sir. We'll use it. You know, I think he kicked some asses.
I guarantee President Bush would have done the exact same thing.
Well, I think that President Bush, even President Bush said, oh, who cares about him? We're going to get Al-Qaeda.
He never said who cares about him.
He said it doesn't matter, remember?
Well, he was being asked a question, Dave, if I could just jump in for a minute. The president was being asked a question about, what about Bin Laden? Yeah, he said, what about Bin Laden? And he said, we're going after Al-Qaeda.
Right.
I don't think...
Osama had gone underground, and he was no longer a director. But I guarantee, having been in a bunker working with military planners, that hunt was still going on. Guaranteed. He wanted him so bad. No matter what he said, I know from the military bunkers what goes on. They were looking for him.
Well,
and all that information
that,
gets passed on and built on stacks of information until they finally have enough information, and you said the four pillars, they get tracked down to one focus point, and they know where he's at, and they go and get him. And any sane president would have done that.
I have to say, as a former member of the military, I have great respect for you. I am not really big on war and all that, but...
Well, nobody's big on war.
No, of course not.
Excuse me, Mr. Henry, I'm just saying that I'm not really all, my father wasn't in the military, so I don't have in a military family, but I'm just saying that for a military, they call it operation, for a military operation, it was pretty exciting to see President Obama go, pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's not a movie. It's not a Hollywood movie, and I think that that's what Bobby, Dave, I appreciate you, and I think you said it very, very well, and you're right. The CIA and defense intelligence, they never stop working. David, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL.
So I just want to say one thing. I'm not being Hollywood movie about that.
That's kind of insulting to say that.
And I'm not trying to insult anybody, but I think you're being a little Hollywood-esque. You go, oh, he pulled the trigger.
Do you know that the neutralization, do you know that?
What is the word neutralization? What is that about?
When they neutraled him. Or not neutraled him. What's the word?
They neutralized him. Let's say they killed him.
Yes, but they don't say that. That was all done by President Obama when he knew that he... There was only one man in that room. How did you put it, Steve?
There's only one man in that room, and everybody else, it was like they weren't even there. And the lights went down, and only one man on that room, and it was President Obama.
President Obama, not Obama, President Obama. And
you don't even know his name. Wow.
Yes, I do, Phil.
Wow. What?
Yes, I do, okay?
Well, Obama, oh, excuse me. Let's get a phone call in here from General Galen Shaw, who is joining us from Northern California tonight. He's up in the up there in the Mendocino area of Northern California. General Shaw, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Phil, I'm doing well, but I joined with the other gentleman who called, who was a former flyer, I believe he said he was, in expressing frustration. With the woman you've got on the line right now, to hear her say it, you think that President Obama, and I think you put it very well, Phil, is Captain America, Spider-Man, and all the nonsense that you've read of so very frequently in recent weeks.
I don't think he's Spider-Man.
I want to finish this point that I'm going to make, because I've been waiting on hold, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And my wife just had a tooth extraction today. She's in pain, and I've been ministering to her. And
what are you doing?
What is that, sir?
What are you doing to your wife?
I said I'm ministering to my wife who had a tooth extraction today. If that's okay with you, sir.
Well,
you're going to be a minister? I'm
Ma'am, let me finish if you wouldn't mind.
No, I just didn't understand.
Let me finish.
Okay, Bobby.
The young man who you spoke with here a moment ago was absolutely right. The intel is vetted and fed into what we call into the ops section of the Pentagon.
You're using a lot of those big words. That's what Republicans do. They use the big...
Ma'am, could I finish what I am saying? I'm not using big words. There's nothing big about the word ops. In fact, it is short for operations.
No, it's about psychological, isn't it?
Bobby, you know, you're talking to a retired general from the U.S. Army, you know...
I think I've got a little more information than the lady does. If you don't mind, I'd like to continue.
That's fine. Go ahead.
If you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all.
Are we reserved the right to ask a question?
What did you say, sir?
We reserve the right to ask a question.
You reserve the right, and I would ask you to hold on to that right that you are reserving to ask the question until I am done with a series of comments that I'd like to make. Number one, the intel that comes in...
Steve, I'm sorry. I have to go to the bathroom. So I'm going to put my phone down, but I'm going to turn the radio on. And there's going to be a seven-second delay, if you're familiar with it, General.
Ma'am, if you want to be rude, and...
You have to go to the bathroom.
I've got to go.
My wife's got to go. He's trying to say she don't have the right.
If your wife needs to go to the bathroom, maybe it's something she should have thought about before she got on the phone and started talking all of this nonsense.
I have to go.
Well, what do you want me to do?
All right, well, go ahead, Ms. Dooley. I mean, we are coming up on a break.
I'm going to go in for the break, huh?
No, I got to go now.
Well, what do you propose I do, Mr. Henry?
Hold on for a minute. We'll take a break. Steve Dooley is also with us. Steve, did you want to weigh in?
Well, I don't want to say anything, Bonnie. She wants to do the talking.
Okay, I'm back.
That was rather disgusting and not needed.
I heard that as well, and I didn't like it either.
You heard what?
I heard your expression there.
What expression did they...
You went,
Oh, so I can't even express relief at finally getting rid of something I was holding all afternoon?
All right. You know, let's take a break.
Mr. Henry...
Let's just take a break, okay?
What did I do wrong?
Hold on. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. General Galen Shaw will be back with Bobby Dooley. And Osama bin Laden, the death of Osama bin Laden, the one-year anniversary coming up May the 2nd. Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley saying that this is President Obama's party. This is President Obama's doing. This is President Obama's victory. And we all hail our commander-in-chief. And the Republicans have to sit there and suck on it. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Soldiers are supposed to be dirty and so...
All right, hold on, General. Back here with General Galen Shaw on the world famous... Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-7445. General Shaw is also with Bobby Dooley here. And so, General, go ahead with your thought.
Well, I was saying something, Phil.
Excuse me, ma'am, but you have not let me finish one thought.
I was saying something. And
what were you saying? In the depths of your ignorance, what were you saying?
How dare you?
Well, the lady, sir, has been cutting me off ever since I tried to come on this program and express my opinion of the United States military's great job in neutralizing Osama bin Laden, as you like to say. They didn't neutral him, they neutralized him.
That was the word I was looking for.
All right. And soldiers do that all the time. Soldiers are dirty, soldiers are hungry, soldiers are tired, but they get the job done. And my guys, when I was in the Army, I used to say my guys are hoo-ha guys. You know, they get after it. And
what do you mean by hoo-ha?
What is that?
What is what, ma'am?
All right, let's not get into that, okay? Let's just take a phone call here. Our number 877-876-PHIL, and this is Ken. Ken, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
I just want to stress that administrations overlap. And my biggest problem with Democrats currently is you want to take credit for killing Obama or killing Bin Laden? Knock your socks off. But then take credit for unemployment. Take credit for bad economy. Take credit for a trillion-dollar deficit on a yearly basis that we have gained. Those are also all things that get to be hung on Mr. Obama's hat.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous to hang a trillion. That wasn't him. But we know.
He doesn't get credit for killing Bin Laden.
Well, no, it doesn't work like that. Osama Bin Laden, the order came directly from the president. He said, we go at midnight.
That was the order.
So was the trillion-dollar a year deficit. That was
an order from Obama as well. No one said, okay, make it a trillion.
Well,
he wanted to make it $2.5 trillion, and the Republicans wouldn't let him.
They did a whole thing too on it.
See, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. One is not the same as the other.
Overlap. There was part of what Bush did that allowed Bin Laden to be neutralized. There was
Bush let him go out of Tora Bora. Hooba Booba. What was the name of the place?
Tora Bora.
Yeah, Bush let him get away. So he did his part.
What is this let him get away stuff? First of all, President Bush was going on the advice of people on the ground not to piss off the Afghan tribal commanders who wanted a piece of this operation and had to get, you know, they had to be political. They couldn't send more American troops into an area where they had Afghan commanders who were starting to get a little bit pissed off over the fact that they weren't being cut in.
What are you talking about?
Mr. Hendry is absolutely correct. The Afghan tribal leaders and commanders were causing a problem which kept the U.S. from sending more troops into Tora Bora.
All right, listen, Ken, thank you for your call.
Ken, I just think it really doesn't work like that, you know. You have to have the peas and the rice, isn't that it?
If you got to have peas and rice, you got to have the peas and the rice.
Exactly.
All right, 877, whatever that means.
You don't know what that means.
That's a bunch of homespun. That's a bunch of horse nuggets. I can tell you that. And you know what I mean by horse nugget, don't you? I mean horse manure.
Oh, well, I didn't get that. Wow.
Young lady, you can be...
But what's the point of being sarcastic?
Well, I have been attacked over and over since I've been on this program. And
we're getting asking questions. Let me go to a phone call here. I got Ruth hanging on the line here. Ruth, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby Dooley.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I agree with the young lady. You're blaming Obama for this and that and the other. What about the war? Why were we there? I guess you're blaming him also for the war.
I am not blaming President Obama for the war.
Not you. I'm talking about this Phil and the people he have calling in. I thought this was the
Shaw
calling in talking about the president. They don't.
Let's get General Shaw in here. General Shaw, what did you say?
I'm a retired Army general, Bam, but I can tell you that I have nothing but respect for our commanders in chief. But I am telling you as well. The go order to send the steels or whatever they're called, because I've been retired for a long time. What are they called again?
Seals.
The seals, to send the seals in and to execute order AB, and that was to neutralize Geronimo, bring out what was left of him. That was indeed given by President Obama. There's no question at all. Now, when we look at the intel, as they say, DIA, CIA, or the State Department intel, this was collected certainly as well during the Bush years, and I dare say some of it collected in the Clinton years. And
what do you mean the Clinton years?
Well, well, that was before 2001, so you're right. But they did, this guy Bin Laden, well, you know, I don't have all my facts. I've been retired for about 10 years now. I don't even know what the name of the lady that I'm talking to. What's your name, Miss Ruth?
Ruth.
Okay, Ruth. What was the name of the guys that killed him?
SEALs.
Oh, all right. Now, am I a fan of President Bush? Yes, I am. Do I think President Obama sort of stumbles his way through life? Yes, I do.
No.
Does that mean I don't respect him? What do you mean, no?
You don't think President Bush stumbled through life? They stole the election?
I think President Bush very smartly...
Brother and all of them stole the election.
I think President Bush very smartly strode into each day. I think President Obama...
He admitted himself that he was a C student. Anybody can be president because he was a C student. To me, that is a terrible message to send out to the young people.
He was a C student. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, well, he's the one who told it.
That's the first time hearing of that.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah, the president said he was a C student. You didn't hear that?
No, I never. Yes. Had I known that?
President Bush said he was a C student.
What about Clinton?
He was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford.
We're not talking what?
Phil Hendry.
Where's the lady? G. Diet.
Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Thank you, General Galen Shaw, and the Dooleys as well for joining us last hour. We're online at philhendryshow.com. You can watch Phil TV in HD. This is a full-color, high-definition picture of our studio. You also see the roiling surf of the El Pacifico behind me. We have three basic camera angles and more. And a lot of other little extra goodies we do with our videocast. Join us for the videocast with a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. Now, last night, Vernon Dozier, who is an educator at Belmar Academy, was on the line with us, and we were discussing the George Zimmerman case. Mr. Dozier is not only a social studies teacher at Belmar, he is as well a member of their board. He's the head varsity football coach. He wears a lot of hats, and... you can well imagine how busy a guy like that is. He's joining us tonight again because what happened essentially was this. He had given an opinion in his social studies class about the George Zimmerman Defense Fund. George Zimmerman, the man accused of killing Trayvon Martin in that neighborhood watch gone awry shooting there in Sanford, Florida. There is a defense fund for George Zimmerman, and it was Mr. Dozier's opinion that anybody that contributed money to it was stupid. And then Vernon's on the line with us here from Glendale. Then a young lady took exception to that, right?
That is correct, Billy. A young woman by the name of Karen Buford, who is in my class, gone home to her father and told her father what I'd said. And I told you last night, and I continue to tell you, that there are some things that are said in the classroom that are no one's business. But as the saying goes, up, you know, if you ever saw that movie Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, where Jeff Bridges, they're standing on a creek, there's a very babbling creek that he's standing. He says, up here, people's business is nobody but their own. Well, that's the same thing in my social studies class. You know, that's my business. And when I'm talking to my students about different things having to do with the daily topics of the day, there are things naturally going to share with their parents. And there's some stuff that I, when I'm giving an opinion, I don't think they're going to run home and you know, squeal. I don't want to say squeal because...
you really call it squealing when the kids are talking to their own parents?
No, I wouldn't characterize it quite like that, but it... I do feel a little betrayed. And so, to make a long story short, she went and told... this guy, this Brett Buford, and I talked to him at a parent-teacher conference, and we had an exchange where, I said, anybody that contributes money to the George Zimmerman Defense Fund is stupid. And he said, well, maybe I think, you know, you sound stupid. And I said, well, stupid is as stupid does. I was quoting the Forrest Gump movie. I wasn't trying to show, you know, I think I got in a good line there. Stupid is as stupid does. And he turned around, took two steps back, and then looked back at me and said, run, Forrest. And the message was delivered loud and clear. In that instant, both of us were frozen in time. And I realized that he was calling me mentally deficient. He was calling me a mental defective. And, you know, if you ever saw that Cuckoo, remember the movie The Cuckoo, or how did things go? The Cuckoo, yeah, with Jack Nicholson.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that's it. He said the mental defectives in formation. Okay. And it's almost like it was, that's what Brett was doing, just going the mental defective right over here. So I just said, Dan, you know, that's it. I felt like there's nothing I can do. There's nowhere I can go. There's no one I can talk to. There's my wife is not going to understand anything that I say because she doesn't care. And I'm not, you know, God bless my wife. I love her very much. She's much younger than me, and she doesn't care what I do for a living as long as I keep the money coming in. And I don't find that either. That's the way women are. That's the way women are. If you want to come home at night to something quality, okay, then you better keep the money coming in.
And look, I don't want to talk, Vernon, about your marriage, okay?
I'm not. Well, I apologize, but I was trying to make a point.
And well, what is the point?
Mr. Hendry, I didn't come on your program again tonight to once again be on the defensive, okay? I'm just saying.
Well, you're talking about you're talking about marriage and women, and if you want to keep something quality at home, what's that got to do? I'm going to get Mr. Buford on the line here in a moment. I just wanted to make sure that we're on point, that's all.
Well, all right, sir, but you sound decidedly. Hold on, would you turn that down, please? The TV. You sound decidedly irritated. And
were you talking to your wife right there?
That's none of your business. That's none of your business. If that's the way you want to play it, we'll play it like that. I was talking to you about my wife. I was talking to you about my wife. But you said, what's this got to do with anything? Now you're asking me, was I just talking to my wife? That's none of your business.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, sir. I don't want to get into an argument.
All right. Well, then it was my wife.
Okay. Whatever. I mean, I'm not.
Mr. Henry, can we get something clear? I just got.
No, but hold on. I got to finish this thought. I don't want to get into a lot of personal arguments about marriages or the definition of marriage. You're telling me that you are not understood by people. That's the essential point of what you were saying.
I am telling you that I'm not understood. When it comes to trying to communicate to my students, and so my students become my last line of communication. And if I can't talk to them, and I can't say something to them like anyone that puts money into George Zimmerman's pocket is an idiot. An idiot. And I say, and I feel strongly, if I can't even say it to my students, who have I got? And what have I got? Now, you tell me. I said I can't talk to her. She's sitting there right now with a spoon shoved in a thing of ice cream. Now, I got to tell you something about my wife. She is all that and a bag of pork rinds. But I'll tell you something. In about 5 years, you hear I'm talking about you now. I said in 5 years, that ass. Well.
Yeah, you know something? We're talking about education. We're talking about students. We're talking about parent-teacher organizations. I don't want to be talking about your wife's rear end. All right.
I apologize. I'm sorry. I wanted to tell her if she keeps eating that ice cream.
You can talk to her about that later. But I think this is the problem that we have when we talk to you and about some of the issues that come up with you, sir. You have this manner in the classroom that's going to rub a lot of parents the wrong way, and then we get sidetracked.
I'm not getting sidetracked. You don't understand.
You're telling me that you have no one to express opinions to, and so you express them to your students. Fair enough. But then you don't want them to go back to their parents and say anything to their parents.
I don't want them to go back to their parents and squeal like so many guys that I came up with. You know, the minute somebody got caught with a gun or they got caught with a car that wasn't theirs, something, they start, well, now I'm telling you too much of a...
Yeah, you, everything you say to me, man, about your marriage, your upbringing, you're telling me now what? You got in trouble with the police?
I didn't say that at all. I didn't say that at all.
Well, you're talking about guys that squealed when they got caught with a gun?
A guy? You don't know people that... What I'm going to say is this.
Why don't we get off of these topics? Because here, Mr. Buford, is he up?
Yeah, I got Brett Buford. You got to come up on line two.
Fine, bud. I can see the line blinking. I just wanted to know if that's him. We're going to talk with you and to Mr. Buford here when we come back from the break. And I don't think we need to. I don't want to limit what the conversation is going to be. But didn't you say you wanted a chance to talk to him?
I wanted a chance to talk to him man to man and tell him about what it's like for me, okay? Just talk about me for a change. I talk about students. I talk to parents. I talk to everyone. When do I get a chance to talk about me?
And I don't know if it's about you as a teacher.
Well, there you go. You see, everywhere I go, I get cut off. I'm looking at her right now. She's on the couch. She's not even paying attention to me. I could talk this loud. I'm talking this loud right now. Becky? She doesn't even hear me. She's got a spoon shoved so far into that moose track, or what do you call that? Moose's tracks. And you know what moose tracks, the ice cream, have you ever had that?
Yeah, I like it.
You like it? It's like they have balls. You're supposed to be imagining that you're digging into a pile of moose turd. That's what it is.
And no, you're not. No, you're not.
Well, why do they call it moose tracks then? Because you're every now and again you come across a moose nugget, something that fell out of a noose's, a moose's.
Okay, hold the line here.
See, I'm 15 minutes into your...
Hold the line here. We'll be right back. Vernon Dozier, he's not going to get very far in this show. He's wound up again, man. Well, we'll get Mr. Buford on. They had a dispute, parent and teacher, and they'll talk it out, hopefully, here on the Phil Henry Show. I don't know why they call it Moose Tracks. All I can tell you is it's damn good ice cream. I don't eat it these days, but maybe someday, way in the future, when I get this weight of mine down to about 200 even, baby, then we'll get back into the Moose Tracks. But that's going to be a long way off. We'll be right back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Why do they call it Moose Tracks? Why can't you answer that?
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here with Vernon Dozier, and we got Mr. Brett Buford on the line. Mr. Buford is the father of Karen, and Karen Buford was the one who had heard the comments about George Zimmerman in Vernon Dozier's class, went home and talked to her father, who is on the line with us now. Where does your family live, sir?
We live in Glendale.
You live in Glendale, okay. And can you tell me when you were at home and your daughter, where did she tell you about this? At the dinner table?
Yeah, you know, in the morning, Karen will, or not in the morning or the evening, the kids will talk to us about how their class went, you know, and we'll talk to them about their classes and their grades and this kind of thing. And she mentioned that they'd had this discussion and this... in social studies, you know, this Mr. Dozier, and I said to her that I actually had donated to this George Zimmerman Defense Fund.
So you had?
Oh, yes, sir.
And how?
Through PayPal.
Okay. And was this on his website?
Yes, sir, it was. And I, you know, gave money to PayPal, and I said to my daughter, you don't think your dad's stupid, do you? And she said, no, you know, my daughter and I are very close. She said, no, Daddy. And she felt bad for me. You know, I said, well, you don't feel bad for me. Feel bad for your teacher. And I said, but we're going to talk to him. Your mother and I are going to talk to him.
So you guys had the parent-teacher conference schedule.
Yes, sir.
All right. So Vernon Dozier is with us. Vernon?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, Vernon, you know Mr. Buford.
Yeah, I know Brett. Brett, how are you doing?
I'm good, Mr. Dozier. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm sorry that we had a little bit of static there. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you and explain to you my feelings, on the issue, you know.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you. And I apologize if I had offended you. You know, I called you Forrest Gump or whatever I said to you.
Well, you said run, Forrest. But I understand, and I know that I probably... I'm not trying to usurp your role as a father, okay?
Right.
I'm just saying that in the classroom, when I am given a social study lesson, I'm also encouraging the students to express their opinions. And then, of course, I express mine. Because...
Now, are you going to be doing all the talking here?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Are you going to be doing all the talking here when...
But that's my understanding, because I'm my understanding is I'm explaining something to you.
Well, I appreciate that, but...
Well, but Mr. Buford would like to give his side, too.
Mr. Buford would like to give his side, too.
Yeah, I was told by the radio station...
I was told by Mr. Henry's staff that I would have the opportunity to explain the whole situation to you.
And I'm happy to hear your side, but I wanted to give you mine, too. So we can have an understanding, you know?
No, Phil.
Well, what, did you think that you were just going to give a lecture here?
I was going to straighten this guy out, that's all. And
I don't need any straightening out, sir, I can tell you.
Well, I think you do in some areas. That's all I'm, you know, see, look, this is like right out of a cartoon. So now we're arguing.
Yeah, okay, so let's not argue. Let's just let you give your side, and then Mr. Buford can give his. Can we do that? Can we hear both sides, and you guys can, you know, keep it down, not get angry?
All right, who goes?
No, you go, sir. That's fine. I'll listen to you.
All right, let me go through it again. I came into the class, and I said, George Zimmerman, the man that killed this kid, has got a defense fund. And I said to my class, what do you think about that? And they said, yeah, they said, nah, they said a lot of stuff. I've been a teacher for 17 years, and I got kids every day, and they're in the class, and you don't remember. One class runs into another, let me tell you. I don't remember. This. All it is just a lot of it's just a lot of noise. But you listen to them. You know, what you're doing is you're trying to encourage them to have an opinion. I said, so George Zimmerman, I said, well, let me tell you what I think. And this is a moment for me. And I told you, Mr. Buford, I told Mr. Henry, I'm telling his audience, this is a moment for me where no one seems to care. No one wants to listen to me, you know. And so I said, well, let me tell you what I think. This is with me, what I think, my life. And this is the point in every classroom that I've ever had where the kids start throwing paper airplanes, okay? You see, are you with me on this, Phil?
And, okay, I mean, all right.
Well, this is where they start with the spitwads, and I'll say, here's what I think. I think, and spitwads, and this, and they're playing trash can basketball. They're playing grab ass. They're playing monkey in the middle. They're doing all of these.
Sir, why don't you have a little more control over the classroom, sir?
Sir, can I finish what I'm saying, though? I do have control over my classroom. But I'm telling you, I've had a lifelong problem with anybody, and I mean anybody. Anybody. Caring whether I live or die. Okay? Right now, I've got a wife sitting on this couch. And
well, sir, I've heard your opinion about your wife. She's eating the Moose Tracks ice cream. She doesn't seem to be much interested in what you're saying. It doesn't mean she doesn't love you. You know,
I think I know my wife better than you. God Almighty, at least give me that. At least give me that. That I know my wife better than you.
All right, sir.
Vernon, can we get past your personal needs?
Who said that?
The host of the show, Mr. Henry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Phil. I'm sorry.
Can we get past your personal needs? Can we get to the meat of the matter here?
All right. So while I'm giving the kids my opinion and the spitwads are flying and the trash can basketball, monkey in the middle, Dharma for one, grab ass, ankle grab, crotch baseball.
What is all of this that you're talking about?
I've been trying to tell you, these are the games that these kids are going to play when they ignore you and don't care whether you're walking around breathing or you're lying there as cold as ice. It doesn't matter at all.
Well, sir, I hate to tell you that I'm not finished, Mr. Buford, so please hold on.
All right, sir.
So I gave my opinion, and when the class was done and I was finished talking, they all got up and left almost as if they didn't even know I was there. They just, you know, they left. And the next thing I hear is from your daughter, who said, I told my dad. All right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't.
Well, see, that's what I mean. You're making fun of my daughter. You're making a voice like you did right there.
All right, but I mean, she came into the classroom, and all right, I'm sorry.
Can't you just say what she said without characterizing it?
Well, I mean, I'm giving you what she said. She came in, and she goes, oh, Mr. Dozier, all right, I won't be a smartass, but she, Mr. Dozier, I told my dad, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what? And he said, my dad contributes. I said, you know.
Well, you said to her, she said to you, that you said to her, that's real disappointing. I'm sorry to hear your dad is such a numbskull.
I didn't say numbskull. I probably said something like douchebag, and I didn't even mean to say that.
Well, I think that's worse.
That's not worse than numbskull.
You called that, are you telling me, I just want to be clear here now. I'm the guy that needs some clarity. You're telling me you said to a student that her father was a douchebag.
You know something, Phil?
Is that what you said to this kid?
You know, let me just, Phil, you have a tendency to really, you really love the drama, don't you?
I love the drama. You're the guy who's been here talking about yourself and about how the girl made a voice and about the kids are throwing spit wads and nobody cares about you and your wife's on the couch. And have you ever had moose tracks? You know.
Oh, so now you're laughing, huh?
Well, I have to be honest with you, sir. It is pretty funny.
Oh, my God. Are the two of you, I want to be clear, are the two of you laughing?
Well, it's a little bit funny.
I laughed at the moose tracks.
Oh, my God. So I've been on this.
Hold on, and just try to, if you can, take a deep breath and just hang on, and we'll be right back with you. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. World famous, Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
God. My God. Why?
Phil Hendry.
Phil, the world famous Phil Hendry Show, our news and information hour in about a half an hour. Right now, though, we are talking with Vernon Dozier and with Brett Buford, the father of Karen Buford, the young lady who was your class, Vernon, and heard your opinion. And we're getting sidetracked a little bit. Give me your opinion, Vernon, and then, Mr. Buford, you respond to that, and then you give me your opinion, and Vernon can respond to that.
Are you going to do this? You going to moderate like it's a
you know, I think you ought to let Phil. I think he's doing a good job. You let him let Phil, you know, kind of run things.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Buford. I just would tell you that I've been on the Phil Hendry Show, and I know how things work. And I'm just going to ask you, Phil, are you going to moderate it like a debate? That's all I wanted to say, but I couldn't get it out because Buford.
Well, I was jumping in with opinion. Oh, my God. Am I going to be able to finish a sentence around here?
You know what? I think what you need to do, Vernon, is just relax, okay? Okay? This is my plan, and I would like you gentlemen to follow it. You tell me your opinion. We'll hear what Mr. Buford, his reaction to that, and then Mr. Buford will give his opinion, then your reaction to that. Can we do that?
Yeah, sure.
You know...
You know, you can't have an attitude like that in life. You have to, you know, kind of go with the punches.
Hey, what is this all of a sudden? Is this Garrison Keillor? I have to tell you,
no, I'm not Garrison Keillor. I come from Hibbing, Minnesota. Not Hibbing. I come from Minnesota, sir. I come from the Iron Range, and I grew up in the cities, and I moved my family to California. I'm not some hayseed. I'm not some backwoods guy. I understand how education works. I've raised a daughter and a son. And I've been happily married for 27 years. And I will tell you that I've got great interest in my daughter and how well she does. And you don't have to talk down to me either.
All right, fine. I mean, I just, you know, you're all, you know, with the, hey,
a boot. Just to me, it sounded real hayseed.
Yeah, I know. You've made that very clear, sir.
All right, Vernon.
What are you going to do? You going to sit there and watch this guy as he mops the floor with me, or what are you going to do?
I'm going to moderate. He's not mopping the floor with you.
Just a blast. He bent me right over the hood of a car right there. You didn't see it? You witnessed it, and you didn't stop it.
I didn't bend you over. No, I put you over the hood of a car, sir. I'm explaining how I raised my children. That's all. I'm telling you that I'm not some hayseed.
Well, then you're not a hayseed, sir. You just sound like one. How about that?
Okay, fine. I'll take that, sir. It doesn't matter to me. You can make all the fun you want. I'm talking about my daughter.
Okay, so you're going to take the moral high road. Is that it?
Yes, that's exactly the high road. That's the road you should take, too, as a teacher.
Okay, Phil, he just bent me over another car. You know what?
Will you stop with the rape analogies? You two guys are talking. Now, if you want to do what I suggested, then there won't be the back and forth.
All I'm saying to you is, in the last 2 minutes, I've been trying to get some soap off of the tile, and every time I...
This guy, have you been in jail, sir?
That's none of your business. That's a very personal question.
Well, I don't know if it's personal or not. You're a teacher. I'd love to know if you've... I've been in jail.
That's a personal question. Now, Phil, you wanted me to give an opinion about what?
About George Zimmerman. What do you think we've been talking about?
Fine. Anyone that gives money to George Zimmerman is an imbecile. I said it in the class. I'm saying it now. I don't mean anything personal by it. But if you give money to George Zimmerman, you're an ass. There's my opinion.
All right, I'll tell you that I did give money to George Zimmerman because I felt that the man had the right to a fair trial, especially in a very highly publicized case like this. And my daughter, she came home.
Okay, you're taking more time than I took. Don't you keep a clock on this?
You took the time that you wanted to take.
Oh, my God, and all I'm doing is asking for the rules.
You know what? I'm going to... I've about had enough of this, okay?
Mr. Henry, please don't... I want to give my opinion, at least. If he wants to sound like a baby...
I don't sound like a baby, sir. I wanted to give an opinion, and now he says he wants to stop.
I'm going to stop if I got to listen to you cry.
I'm not crying. I just wanted... So anyway, Mr. Henry, I want to give my opinion, and this is it. I think the man's entitled to his opinion.
Am I on the clock here or what?
Then say something.
In the last 10 minutes, I have stood here. I have been tied to a shower faucet. As this man here...
Boy, you just can't get off that, can you?
Can I finish, please? Can I finish, please?
Guy's on a rape analogy again.
No. I'm saying, were my hands free, I would have defended myself. But Mr. Henry and you both tied my hands to the shower faucet. And then you basically opened the emergency door, the back door, and in strides that guy, Jerry, what's his face, from Penn State. Now, how do you think that would make me feel? And that's exactly what you guys did. That's exactly what you guys did.
Because I didn't interrupt this guy while he was scoring points in his response to you. You call that having your hands tied to a shower, and you bring up that Penn State thing? You got to be crazy. You got to be more than crazy.
That's sick.
Why am I crazy?
What has that got to do with any of that, man? You are here, an adult man. You can defend yourself. Now, you said what you said about George Zimmerman. People are stupid. Here's a man who's got a daughter in your class. She told her father. He came and he confronted you. Now we're in the classroom. I want to get to that point where the two of you guys are squaring off.
All right. I said to this guy that anyone that gives money to George Zimmerman is a blithering imbecile. And he said to me, well, you go ahead, tell him what you said.
Yeah, then I said to him, I said, well, then maybe I think your opinion, the opinion comes from a blithering imbecile.
Right, and then I said to him, no, you didn't, you said it's stupid.
No, I said it comes from a blithering imbecile.
Well, then I said stupid is as stupid does.
Yeah, and that's what I said, that's got nothing, I said it doesn't make any sense for you to say that when I said blithering imbecile.
No, you didn't. Because I remember feeling good that I'd scored one.
And you're telling me that, no, you didn't? You're not remembering it properly. You said the word stupid. That's why I came back with stupid is as stupid does.
All right, okay, I'll give it to you. It's not that big a deal to me.
Well, no, I want the record to be clear. You used the word stupid, didn't you?
I said that I repeated what you said. You said blithering imbecile. I said blithering imbecile.
No, you didn't. You used the word stupid. See, this is what's unfair about it.
God, this is what he did the other night, too.
What did he do, cry?
Well, it looked like he was going to...
Stop crying. I'm trying to tell you. So, then he turned around and he went like you were going out.
Yeah, I turned and I went, and it's something that I do. It's like a psychological power play. I turned, I walked to the door, then I leaned against the door jamb.
That's right.
And I said, run, Forrest. And that's when he looked like he had... You looked like you had an accident in your pants.
No, I didn't. Yeah, no, I didn't. I admit I was stunned.
You looked like you dropped one.
I admit I was stunned, but I gathered myself. I saw you with that half smile, and that's when I figured you'd scored one. And he walked outside, and it had been a misting night. It had been raining, and so there was moisture on the glass, and he wrote, me one, you nothing, and strolled away. And I went back out and tried to change it to me one, you one, because I thought at worst I tied him. And
I don't. What does that mean, me one, you one?
Well, because, I said me one, you nothing, because when I said run for us, and he looked like he dropped the load, I figured I'd won that round.
Are you two adult men are talking to me like this?
What is that supposed to mean?
I'll tell you what it means. You two guys are adults. And you're talking about the well-being of a young student, this man's daughter, and you two jackasses are going, me one, you nothing?
Well, I don't understand what's so funny about that.
I don't either. What we were doing, Mr. Henry...
What you guys were doing was you were playing mind games with each other with Forrest Gump insults. Then you, Mr. Buford, who up to this point I thought was probably making the better of the points, you walk outside and you write, me one, you nothing.
Because I scored. I thought I scored.
I went out. No, but I went outside and I made it 1-1.
Yeah, I know, and I was upset with that.
But what difference does any of this make when you're talking about his daughter?
Talking about his daughter?
What? What do you mean he's talking about my daughter?
Is she a student?
Oh, yes. It means that, you know.
I think both of you guys ought to be ashamed of yourselves. I think both of you guys, teacher and father, spent more time puffing your chests out and trying to be big shots.
Mr. Henry, you know.
Hold on. I think you, Vernon, have got a psychological problem.
That's not news. You're always saying that to me.
Well, you do, man. You do. You've almost been in tears tonight. Last night, you sounded like you're going to have a stroke. And meanwhile, your wife's TV is still turned up.
I've tried to tell her to turn it down, and she won't.
Yeah, that's because you seem to not have... You don't have any control anywhere, man.
No one... Thank you. Now you're finally seeing it. No one listens to me.
Well, I don't blame them not listening to you. There's not a whole lot to listen to.
Well, you know what? That may be a good point. You're just not a very assertive guy, and you're certainly not very interesting.
So my wife doesn't... Turn the TV down, Becky. Turn it down, not up.
She probably turned it up to drown you out.
I was going to say, that's probably why she did it.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Wait. I to leave me twisted in the breeze. My students were listening tonight. Other parents are listening tonight.
Well, you lose, you know. I win, you lose. Me one, you... Me one, you nothing.
No, not me. No, me one. Me, you... Me won, you won.
I know, I won.
No, me won, numeral one. I would like Mr. Henry to weigh in. Don't you think that...
No, I'm not weighing in on anything. Thank you very much and good night. There's one kid there who's got a moron for a father, an idiot for a teacher. Good luck to you, kid, wherever you are. Well, I guess she's a senior. She'll be graduating, so, you know. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. Or what?
No.
The Phil Henry Show.
Me one, you.
No, me one, you. You.
Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. On the line, let's see, going on to the phone call, bud?
Yeah, line one.
All right, we have Ermine on the phone. Ermine, is that you?
Hi, Phil. Listening to your show tonight, this is a very interesting conversation, but I think it's out of control to listen to this man who is the teacher speaking the way he's speaking. I've been a teacher myself, and I've taught at the elementary level, and I've taught small children, but I've never heard anyone having a difficult time with an opinion to give, and then give it to a parent and not have the parent be heard. And I'm not quite understanding what the man's saying.
Yeah, this is Vernon Doyle. Is this Ermine?
Hi, yeah.
Ermine, simply saying.
This Brent Buford, too, Ermine. I just wanted to say I'm here, too.
Okay, that's good. I'm here to listen to both of you gentlemen.
All right, can I say what I want to say, or are you going to...
No, you go ahead and say what you want to say, you know, but I'm just saying you have to let me...
I'm going to let you say what you want to say. I'm going to let you say what you want to say. Okay?
Yeah.
Ermine, I came into the classroom that day, and I wanted to talk about a George Zimmerman case that has been in the U.S. headlines about a guy who's driving around in his neighborhood, and he saw a guy, and he stopped, and he said, "What's going on?" And then he decided to pull a gun and blow the guy away. Now, I don't know what country you're from, but in America, you don't get to do that. Now, this guy, Mr. Buford, is coming on here and telling me, and he told his daughter that he gave money to Zimmerman's defense fund. That's fine. But when I say that I think anyone that gives money to the Zimmerman defense fund has got a problem, I am confronted by the daughter, the father, and I don't have anyone who hears me.
Okay. I'm listening to you.
No one listens to me.
I think you made your point, sir.
No one listens. No, I haven't made my point. I must say, no one listens to me.
Hey, look, your name Vernon, right?
What's that?
Your name Vernon, correct?
Yeah, my name's Vernon.
All right, Vernon, I'm listening to you, and you have opinion that George Zimmerman, you give money to the George Zimmerman fund, you're stupid, you know. But that man there, he gave money, so he's going to have a different opinion.
But you don't understand.
That was my point, too.
No, neither one of you guys understands. Neither one of you guys understands. My opinion counts because I'm the teacher. The teacher. Now, I know Mr. Henry's going to have an exception to, he's going to have a conniption because I'm trying to be emphatic because you got to listen.
I'm listening to you. I know you're the teacher of the student, but why are you angry?
I'm not angry. I want to. Oh, God.
Why does someone?
Why don't you calm down, okay? Why don't you calm down? Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
You know, don't tell me you're from Minnesota. You're a Canadian. Okay?
I'm not a Canadian. I come from Minnesota. I'm an American citizen.
Well, where are you? What are you?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
I'm from Guatemala.
Guatemala. I got a car. Okay. I'm the teacher, so I get to say what I want to say. I get to say what I want to say.
What about me? I'm the father. Don't I have an opinion, too?
You've got your opinion in your house. But when your daughter comes in to my classroom and she says, "Guess what? My father thinks this." And I say to her, "Well, I don't care. I don't care what your father does. I don't care whether your father flips or falls in it. I don't care whether your father walks out of the house, gets into the car, and goes to work, or whether he walks out of the house, gets into the car, and drives, and yes, I said this, and drives to a whore house. And yes, I said that."
You said that to a young student?
Oh, my God.
Hey, don't be dramatic. This is a senior in high school.
I had no idea you said that to my daughter. If I'd been there, I heard that, I would have busted your nose.
Hey, you think so, huh? You think, really? So you want to get some? Come on, get some.
No, no, there's that come on, get some, and none of that stuff. Grow the hell up.
What do you mean, grow up? He just said he wanted to bust my nose.
You're talking that way to his daughter?
I said it for a reason. I said it for a reason. I didn't say it to say that her father doesn't have balls. I said it didn't matter to me what her father thought of me in my classroom because only I, and only I alone, get to have an opinion in my classroom. Only me.
Well, I mean, my opinion is this. I think this man is right if to say...
Yeah, see, I'm right. I'm right.
Well, why don't you let him finish, because he's not finished what he's going to say. Oh, hold on, yeah. I think the man's right to the opinion that he is the one who's giving the lesson, but certainly the girl is the one who gets to come to the classroom, you know, and say what her father thought.
Why? I don't understand. What difference does it make to me? And that's why I said what I said. You know, she comes in, Mr. Dozier, my daddy, and okay, I'm sorry I'm making fun, but... That's what it sounds like to me. You got to understand, when these kids come in from home, and they always sound the same.
Are you kidding me? Every single kid?
Every one of them. It sounds exactly the same. They come in. And you never even hear what they're saying, because all it is a lot of whine. It's just... That's all you hear. And she came in, and I, you know, by some miracle of God... I heard what your daughter said, sir. Okay?
Well, I guess that makes me a real lucky guy, huh?
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, it does. And I heard her, and she goes, Mr. Dozier, my father gave money to Zay. And I made out George Zimmerman. Started to go just, but I made out George Zimmerman. And
oh, will you get real?
What do you mean get real?
I'll knock it off with a you can hear what these kids are saying fine. And she said her father gave her the George Zimmerman fund.
Yeah, and I said it doesn't make any... What bearing does that have on anything? I said, what possible bearing does your father... I said, and that's what I said. Your dad could walk out the door and drive his car directly to the Cherry Blossom Ranch, 15 miles outside of Las Vegas, and I've still got their card. Okay?
You know what, sir? That just about says it all about you.
Oh, give me... Are you telling me...
All right, thanks a lot, Vernon.
Well, you can't hang up.
I just did. That's the second night in a row. Well, that did a lot of good.
You said glood.
Yeah, that did a lot of glood. We'll be right back here on the world... I know what I said, bud. The world-famous Phil Henry Show News and Information Hour.
Phil Henry.
Pacifico, Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. This is radio for patriots by patriots, and that means we are here for you, and we're here to do just one thing. That is lockstep, join hands, and walk right over top of all the meatheads and the idiots that have attempted to make this country such an insufferable place to live in. And our number is 877-876-PHIL, and this hour we're going to talk with Art Griego about the wedding season, and has the struggling economy affected the wedding industry? It's a wedding season, and photographer Art Griego, who's also done some work as a private pilot, I think we can probably take that off the screen now, bud.
That is pretty interesting.
We're showing a picture that was done of me by an artist named Kanatha Grisvard and Amanda Green. Both of them do these little art pieces. And they send them to me, and they look really strange.
That one looks just like you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Anyway, so welcome back, folks. And we're online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. That means you can go over to our website and get a backstage pass and watch the show as well as listen to it. Phil TV in HD. We got it all going on here with high-definition video. And just a beautiful picture right now. I'm sitting in front of the El Pacifico, which is where our broadcast studios are located here in the land of the fog and the sea lions. Now, get yourself a backstage pass and you'll figure it all out. Don't worry about it. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445. So, as we mentioned, we're in a down economy, and don't we all know it? Especially those of us who own businesses or who have recently started businesses. Those of us who are in the midst of perhaps trying to expand a business. Art Griego's with us. And Art, you started out as where are you, in Santa Monica?
Phil, I'm at the Santa Monica airport right now. It's kind of busy. I'm in the restaurant right now.
And you started out as a commercial pilot. You went into the business of private charters. And now you're doing photography. You're kind of a renaissance man.
Well, I've been doing photography all of my life, and it was only in the last, I'd say, year that I decided to get into the business of photography for as a commercial enterprise, Phil. So that's my wife gave me the idea of Wedding Portraits by Art.
And it's called Wedding Portraits by Art?
That's my business. And we will go to weddings and take photographs, not only of obviously the bride and the groom, but of the extended family and the wedding receptions and so forth. And
how is business? So we were talking about the business, the economy being down.
Well, business is very rough. Business is very rough. You have to, in my line of work, at least the way I see it, the best thing you can do is to take a series of photographs at a wedding and hope that one or two of them is noticed by one of the big wedding magazines, and you get the photograph published in Bridal Magazine or Wedding Magazine or one of these. So I am constantly on the lookout for photographs, for jobs, really, where that's going to happen. And you'll get hired to do a wedding shoot. You show up, and you have an opportunity to do some wedding. You know, I just saw in the paper today, Phil, Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, was it in the paper?
It was in one of the later editions, or maybe I saw it on a website.
Yeah, Hugh Hefner's wedding to Crystal Harris is called off. I haven't had time to look into that. We will cover that in our next hour, but suffice it to say, that would have been a great job, huh?
Oh, it would have been a fantastic job to have. She's a very, very beautiful woman, and Mr. Hefner has a beautiful, without question, a beautiful home. They're the Playboy Mansion where he lives, so that's the kind of a dream job that you would like to have, and unfortunately, that one. I don't know who had that job, but
well, he's out the job too. So everybody, all the caterers, think of that.
Oh yeah, but it can be a lucrative business. But these days, it's been tougher because I'll show up for a job. I think I have the job in hand, and I show up and I look at the couple, and immediately you sort of feel your shoulders slump a little bit, and the only thing you can do is start to put the equipment back in the bag.
And what do you mean you look at the couple? You'll show up.
You'll show up and you'll see the couple, and if you put together what I'm telling you right now with what I said to you a few minutes ago about being able to get a picture into Bridal Shower magazine, being able to get a picture into Modern Bride, if I show up and I see the couple and the bride is going to be not acceptable, you can go ahead and do the job if you want. I choose not to.
What are you, when you say that the bride's not acceptable, you're talking about to have a published picture?
Yeah. And just to, the first thing you want is a really beautiful set of pictures.
But isn't that up to the couple?
Well, it's up to the couple, Phil.
Isn't that the I want some beautiful pictures for my wedding. You know, I don't know what the bride or the groom or whoever would say to you, you know.
Well, they want you to come and take the standard array of photographs for their wedding, having to do with the ceremony, having to do the formal portrait, having to do the family portraits. There are a series of them that you have pictures taken of the groom and his groomsmen, the bride and her bridesmaids, so on and so forth.
Right. So you're there to take these pictures.
I'm there to take the pictures, yes. But the problem that we run into in the wedding photograph business is that you show up
and you immediately realize there's no way, no way that you're going to make any money, any real money on this job.
And the real money is your being able to sell one of these photographs to a big magazine?
Yeah.
What if the couple doesn't want you to do that?
Well, I mean, generally, it's pretty lucrative. And you'll say it's a limited rights thing. So you can say to the couple, if I'm able to sell one of these photographs or two of them to one of the bridal magazines, you'll get a piece of the fee. And it's a limited use thing.
So they only use it for a certain amount of time.
Right. But if I show up and I see the situation has gone bad, and
I you're using a little bit of code here, man.
I'm sorry, Phil. I'm trying to as professionally as I can.
Well, when you say you show up and the situation's gone bad,
say it's gone south or it's gone sour. It's like if food goes bad, a wedding shoot will go bad. The same way food goes bad. The way I shouldn't say this, but I heard. In the Casey Anthony trial, you were mentioning they said the smell of a...
Yeah, a decomposing body.
Right. Well, I can tell you right now, a wedding photography job can get as... It'll go as bad as something that smells like that.
And well, I don't know what... Meaning what, Art? You're not making enough money?
You're not going to make any money. And so if I get a call... And they book me, and they say, we would like to book you. And
well, don't you meet these people ahead of time?
Not always. They've seen my work. They call me up. They ask me to come down.
So you don't meet them ahead of time?
No.
So they call you up, and they book you. You're not signing any contract.
No, they just say, will you please? Yes, I will. Where is it going to be? It's going to be at the Riviera Country Club. It's going to be at Rancho Park. In other words, when they mention it's going to be at some high-end place...
Then you're more likely to want to take the job?
No, absolutely. And then you show up, and everything has just rotted away from the... It smells like that car.
You know? All right, I get... I don't understand. I don't think that's a very apropos comparison. I don't want to use that. But you're saying...
What I'm saying is the job went bad.
Because the bride is what?
The bride is... too big. She's not going to be lovely enough to get me any kind of. Believe me, Phil, when I tell you, every bride is beautiful. Every bride is beautiful.
And well, if every bride were beautiful, Art, you would be, taking these jobs.
Well, I take the job if I need the job, but it's not. Every bride is beautiful, but not every bride is beautiful enough to. For wedding portraits by Art.
And because you're not going to make any money selling or leasing the rights of that photograph.
That is correct, because she's not the slender, Look, I can tell you this, Phil, the Crystal Harris-Hugh Hefner wedding was the event of the season. Why? Because she is, in the parlance of the street, not the way I talk, not the way you talk, but the way someone who lives in the gutter would talk. But let's just be clear, in that she's a piece of ass, okay?
All right, well, if we're not talking like we live in the street, let's not do it then.
No, I was using their terminology.
And let's use terminology that a couple of educated men would use.
All right.
She's a beautiful woman.
She's a beautiful woman, absolutely. And forgive me, Phil, but I wanted to, that doesn't hit home as much.
And to me, it does. It's perfectly fine. So you have a beautiful woman, and this is a job that you want to do. I have to tell you, you want to go to weddings, and then you see that the bride is too large or too fat or whatever you call it.
I did not use that word.
Okay. You turn around and leave?
You have to.
And what happens to these people who had an understanding that you were going to photograph their wedding?
The understanding is, and I think, and that's why I'm on your show tonight, I want people to understand that you're not going to take pictures of a wedding when the bride is that size.
And what size are we talking about?
We're talking about a size that she's going to take up. I don't know what do you mean?
What when a bride is that size, you don't want to take the wedding pictures. What size are we talking about?
We're talking about a woman big enough to fill up, if you're talking about an 8x10, let's say, she's going to fill most of
one half of it.
I don't know what that means.
You can take a look. If you take an 8x10 and...
All right, I'm going to do this on camera. In fact, people can see at home. Here's a sheet of paper. Bud, how many inches?
Hold on. How many inches is what?
The paper.
Well, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Let's just say this is an 8x10. One half of this, fully?
The entire half. But it would vary, of course, because I don't think that's a real 8x10. But if she's big enough to dwarf things around her, or if it's just a case that there are other problems, such as the, the teeth. I mean, I don't know how far you want me to go with this.
Well, in other words, if she's ugly?
I don't want to use that word.
Well, that's where you're going. She's fat and ugly.
No, Phil, I would rather not say. I'm just simply saying, you asked me how is business.
Yeah, it sounds to me like business is pretty good and you're turning jobs down. You know?
No, I am not.
Well, wait a minute. Yes, you are.
No.
Yes, you are. You're going out to a job that you have been hired to do. You see that the bride is either too big or her teeth are bad or something. So you said to me that your shoulders slump, you feel bummed out, you put the stuff back in the bag, and you split.
I have no choice at that point.
Well, it doesn't sound to me like business is bad. Hold on for just a minute here, Art. We have to take a break. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. This is a man who, Art Griego, who does wedding photographs, but turns down jobs if the bride is too large or if she's got bad teeth or something because he can't lease these photos to big magazines. And I don't know if any of you ever had an experience where a photographer showed up and then turned around and left, but that's what he's done on a couple of jobs. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and we're in an economy, and he's turning jobs down because the bride's too big. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
On the line with me, Lloyd, we talked a little. We have Art Griego with us. Mr. Griego is a wedding photographer. We've talked to Art in the past about aviation issues also, but you have been doing this for the last year, Wedding Portraits by Art. And you're saying that you're struggling.
Well, business has been really bad. If it doesn't pick up, like everything else, we certainly would be looking towards some sort of a helping hand from our government, like any business would want. But we are I'm in big trouble, and every business is. I understand that.
But you're turning business down.
No, I'm not. I'm not turning business down. I don't understand when you say turning business down. I can't use it. I go to a job that's gone bad. I go to a job that has gone bad, like a bad, exposed meat in a refrigerator.
And how is a job? When you say you go to a job and it's gone bad.
Yes.
You're saying that you go to a job and you see a bride.
I can't do it. I can't make any money with that. She's that size.
But you could still take the gig and take the photographs, right?
It's not any kind of real money. The real money, the real home run money, is being able to lease some of these photographs. I can't do it, Phil. I'm telling you, I would love to be able to do it, but I can't do it when you look at a bride that looks like that. And some of these weddings are a little rural, and the teeth. If you're taking a picture and the teeth are not symmetrical, the light catches a tooth, and it literally can blind you to death. It'll blind your eyes. It'll burn the eyes right out of your skull if the light catches a tooth that is sticking out. So,
I've never heard of anything like this before in my life. I don't know anything about photography. I've never heard of a guy turning down jobs.
I'm not turning down jobs. They're going rotten on me. They're hostile to the economy.
Well, you have not made the case, though, Art, that the jobs are, quote, going rotten on you. All you're saying is you can't take pictures of a bride who's too big. 877-876-PHIL. John in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
This guy is a wacko. I don't know what he's talking about. Do you know how much it costs to get wedding pictures at a wedding? Thousands of dollars.
That's exactly right.
Hours,
exactly right.
Thousands.
No,
how much
do
you get wedding pictures cost? This guy is a wacko.
I don't make thousands. I don't make thousands. The problem is you're going to make. First of all, are you a photographer?
No, I'm not a photographer. I have friends.
Well, then you don't know anything about it. You don't know anything about it.
Come on,
I'm a guy.
Photographers. I have friends, and I just get away.
You have friends.
As a DJ, you're a wacko, man. You can go out there. You've got a lucrative business. Be an American. Get out there and work. Here it is.
No, I don't have a lucrative business. I don't have a lucrative business when I show up, and she's the size of a house.
Too bad. Man,
what?
I wish if I had the skills and I had a camera, I'd go out to...
Exactly, you wish. You wish you had the skills. You wish you had the skills. Good point.
So
you don't.
You,
I do.
Why don't you use your skills?
I am. I'm telling you something about the business that you don't know. You think you know the business, you don't.
Hey.
No, you don't know anything about my business.
To get pictures. It takes thousands of dollars to get pictures.
Let me ask you, how do you know all of this? How many times have you been married? What are you talking? Where are you getting this information?
I have a friend that's a wedding photographer. I have a friend.
You have a friend.
He gets $1,000.
Well, he said that.
Wedding as a DJ to do
right.
Wedding pictures. You're talking about a couple of $1,000. And
no,
some of these guys
wrong.
Do two weddings
yeah.
in a weekend.
You can. Do,
I mean,
you,
I don't know what
listen
you're
to me.
Talking
you
about
can
here.
Do, t- Mr. Henry. I'd like to say something.
Go ahead.
You can do $2,000, if you get the job. If you show up. And she's too big. You don't get. You can't do the job.
No.
Nobody's fired. No one's firing you from the job, right?
No. What do you mean? No one's firing you from the job.
You go there. You got the job. You can do the job.
You can't.
You don't take.
You can't do.
That's not good
business. How am I supposed to do it when she's that big?
Man, I think you need to go to business school or something.
No, you need to go to photographer school so you know what my business is about. I'm not trying to tell you your business, whatever it is. I will tell you. That when you show up and she's the size of what, you know, use your imagination. No way.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. That man, in my opinion, was, I agree with him. He was almost apoplectic. He couldn't believe what he was hearing.
Well, you know, that he could be as apoplectic. He's got a friend who's a DJ at a wedding. He's got a friend who's a wedding photographer. Well, here's a guy that's really upwardly mobile. You know,
well, he's talking about a couple of people that he knows that make all this money.
Well, you can't make that kind of money.
Yes, if you turn around and you walk off of a wedding because the bride is too large, as you put it.
All right, you want me to be, I'll be great. She's fat. Fat and ugly.
Well, that's pretty cruel and crude for a guy who's supposed to work with people for a living. A man who is supposed to make a beautiful day even more beautiful, a guy who is supposed to present to the happy couple portraits of themselves and their families in a happy moment. She's too fat and ugly, you say, so you turn around and you walk out on the job.
You have not given me the opportunity here, Phil, to explain to you and to your audience just exactly how important it is that they drop a few pounds before I can do anything with the picture. Otherwise, they're going to look at me when I walk into Bridal Shower magazine or Modern Bride, and they're going to say, oh, here he comes. It's Griego again with more of these beasts.
And all right, hold on for a minute. 877, here it's Griego again. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Talking about...
Phil Hendry. Dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have with us Art Griego from Portraits by Art as we talk about the wedding season, June. You've had jobs that you have walked out on because you say they are hostile to your economics. And I want you to define that. Other than saying you show up, Art, and the bride is too large, or she doesn't have the right figure, or something.
Phil, that's it in a nutshell. I'm not here to judge any human being or to say that someone is not beautiful or what have you, but I know what my business requires. If I show up for a job to take pictures, a wedding portrait, and the two people that I'm looking at, you know, you want to just... You feel the disappointment. That's all I'm saying. You feel like you've been kicked in the gut. When you turn the corner and you look at the... I forget what it's called, where they stand under it.
You're a photographer and you don't know the names of these things?
No, I don't. It's I call it the archway.
I mean, I don't either, but I would think you'd know this.
You don't either, but you're telling me... I mean, I would just point this out, Mr. Henry. What the arch thing is for weddings, not everybody knows.
Yeah. I would think that a wedding photographer would. So you turn the corner.
And what?
You say you turn the corner.
Well, I just turn the corner and I see some, you know, and then I take that picture to Bridal Magazine. And I have been more than one time had a receptionist at Modern Bride saying, here comes Art and his petting zoo. Here comes Art.
And you're telling me that's what they're calling these brides?
The ones that when they're bat size, yes, sir.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, talking about bridal pictures and why some of them he can't take. Here is Paul in Lafayette, Louisiana. Go ahead, sir.
I just want to know how he gets work. If this is genuinely his name, and my mom's a professional wedding photographer, you're putting your name out there on a national photographer to show up and shoot the wedding, regardless of their of what they look like. I don't understand how you get work.
I just have to ask you, Paul, to watch your language a little bit there. Art, go ahead. That's all right.
Yeah. Well, the gentleman just said the. What do you want me to say?
I think you should answer his question.
His question was, how do I get... I get a lot of work. Because people want...
Oh, sorry.
Well, they want to have their pictures taken. And okay. So I show up. And what have they done to me? See, I'm giving them my job. I'm coming with my cameras. I'm coming with my lights. I'm coming with all of the stuff that I got my assistant. And your mother does the work, so you know. And what are they giving me? They're giving me a bride that looks... They're giving me a bride with the big, you know, shoulders and...
The big shoulders.
It just sounds like you're in the wrong business because the day...
No, I'm in the right business.
Well, the day that my mom walks off a wedding is the last day she shoots a wedding because, you know, in this day and age of technology and how fast your name travels with Yelp and everything... Why would anyone go to Art when he's just, you know, depending on how you look, he's going to determine whether he's going to pole vault himself into a weddings magazine?
Well, wait a minute. I want to ask you a question. When your mother takes a picture, does she try to get these sold to, does she try to sell pictures to Modern Bride and to big magazines? I'm sure she does.
Yes, of course. Naturally, yes, but other than that, she does it to capture special moments in people's lives. She doesn't do it to capitalize on it.
Let's talk turkey here for a minute. Yeah, let's talk turkey here for a minute. Your name's Paul. Paul, you sound like a good guy, and I know you love your mother, but let's talk business for a second.
What?
No, you know, I'm very happy to go and capture a happy moment, blah, blah, blah. That's great. I'm here to make myself a nice dollar. I want to make a beautiful dollar, okay? Now, I turn the corner, and there is a bride with the big, I can only say the big shoulders. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
What are you talking about?
The big woman.
Okay.
I can't do it. I have a physical inability.
Is that
you understand what I'm saying, Paul?
Depending on how you look, that determines whether you're going to shoot them. Like, I just couldn't see the
game. That's a very good point.
You know what? I got to go.
You have to. I don't know how your mother does it. She's going to show up, and she turns the corner, and there's a woman there who's got that big, thick neck.
She finds the beauty of every individual.
That's what you do with the picture. All right, Paul, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to another phone call here. We have Dave. Go ahead, Dave. That's what a photographer is.
Phil, I don't need him to tell me what a photographer is. I know what a photographer is.
Go ahead, Dave.
I think that man from Arch, he ought to be put out of business. I mean, people like him, look at Karen Carpenter. I don't know if you're old enough to remember her, but she died because of people like him.
Who are you talking about?
Karen Carpenter had anorexia.
Exactly.
I'm not asking a woman,
exactly.
I'm not asking a woman to starve herself.
Because people judgmental on their weight, on their size, on everything. And he is being very judgmental on
judgmental
on their appearance. What? Now, if he wants to be Nazi, that's what he needs to do.
Right.
What is that?
Because
mean?
That's
if
exactly
you want to photograph really
like he's doing.
Good-looking people, then go out and photograph good-looking people.
I do wedding photographs.
Well,
wedding
he's ugly on the
by
inside,
art.
I'll tell you that.
I had the... Well, sir, I went and started a business. I had cards made. I have a sign in the door, wedding portraits by art. Now, you want me to go ahead and set fire to all of that figuratively and go out in the street someplace with a bunch of other sweating idiots? No, not me.
Well, what do you
no
think
way.
You are? You're being judgmental to every woman that's walking the face of the earth, that their most beautiful day in the world is the day they get married. And what difference
you got
does
it
make whether she's a size 1 or a size 21?
The
that
difference
is, her day,
is...
And you're hired to take her pictures, and I'll tell you what, if I hired someone to take pictures of my daughter's wedding and they walked out, I'd be their worst nightmare. Because you wouldn't
have the sir.
Anywhere.
You recognize my right that if I were to take pictures at your daughter's wedding and I turn the corner and she's got all that thickness, you recognize my right to leave, don't you?
The thickness.
Yeah, well,
what are you talking?
You don't contract to hire to do a job and base it just on someone's appearance. I'll tell you what.
I want to know. But just hold on for just a second, Dave.
When you leave this world and go to the other side, we're all level at the foot of the cross. And when the Lord
I don't play that. Okay. Yeah, that's
no,
fine,
well,
sir.
I
and I'm sure you're right.
I hope you go out of business.
I'm sure you're right, sir. I'm sure that you're right that I'll burn in hell. But before I do, we're on my time.
I can't judge.
You know,
I can't judge.
We're on my time. You know, as Jason Patrick said in that great movie, I forget what, Your Friends and Neighbors, he said, you know, if it turns out that this God thing is real, then I'll have to deal with it. Until then, we're on my time. All right?
Yeah. I
what is whatever. You know, whatever, man.
What do you mean, whatever? What do you mean, whatever?
What, you're the guy that's saying whatever.
No, I thought you did.
No, you did. You said whatever.
Well, I'm just trying to tell this guy that I'm here to make a living, not to take pictures of wildlife.
Boy, you know something? I can only repeat what the other chap said. And, Dave, thank you very much for your call. You know.
Well, sir, I have to tell you, I'm the piece of work. Why is it that I have to take pictures of these big women, and I can't sell any to Modern Bride magazine, and I'm eating out of a can. Every night, I'm opening a can up and eating out of it.
Why do you eat out of a can?
Because it reminds me I want to eat out of a can until I make some real good money.
Well, I don't know what that means. Thank you very much, Dave, for your call. 877.
What do you mean? You don't know what it means.
877-876-PHIL. I'm talking here with Art Griego.
No, I want to know. What do you mean you don't know what it means?
I don't know. What does that mean, you're eating out of a can?
I eat out of cans until such time as I sell a job to Modern Bride, and then I'll sit down with a plate and silverware and a napkin.
And why are you eating out of the can?
Because... I'm poor.
Are you telling me that you don't have silverware?
You don't understand. Yes, I've got silverware, and yes, I've got plates. But I'm not, you can't talk. The economy's bad, and I don't even want to think about it. I'm depressed, and I'm eating out of a can.
Why don't you eat off of plates and use silverware and the napkins that you say you own?
Mr. Henry, now you're harassing me. And
no, I'm asking you. You said you eat out of a can.
I do. Every night I open a can up and I eat over a sink. How does that... Do you do that?
No, I don't.
Well, of course you don't, because you make good money.
Well, are you starving to death?
Am I what?
Are you starving to death?
I'm eating out of a can.
Well, what you're telling me is this. You're eating out of a can so you can get sympathy where you could actually afford to eat off of plates, and you don't.
I have not referenced that at all.
All right, well, I don't even want to talk about that because that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. The stupidest thing that I've ever heard in my life. We're going to continue, though, talking about your business, why you're turning down business. And
well, this other gentleman who was talking to me about me going to hell, now, that's a new low on any radio program that I've been on.
Well, we're not going to talk about that. The only thing that we need to discuss here is this idea that the women that you photograph, if they're too large, you get this reputation at bridal magazines that here comes Art in his petting zoo. And you're not in the process, you're not in the business of photographing wildlife. And all of these other insults.
I don't want to be insulting, Phil, but when I, if I show, I don't want to be insulting. You're absolutely right. I'm trying to make a living.
You are making a living.
How are you figuring that?
You're eating out of a can just for effect. You said that you got silverware and all of this bullcrap you're giving me, man. You are...
Well, I'm glad you can laugh at another man's misery.
I'm not laughing at anybody's misery. You're not poor. You're eating out of a can.
I'm eating out of a can.
But you could eat off of plates.
I wish you wouldn't continually go down that road.
I'm going down that road because you can afford to eat off of a plate. You can afford to use silverware. You can afford to have napkins. You can afford to probably sit there and, excuse me, make yourself dinner. But you won't do it. You'll eat out of a can until you sell some big job to Modern Bride magazine. Isn't that right?
You know what, Phil? You're not Jose Feliciano. Or who's the gentleman that...
Jose Feliciano.
Who's the gentleman that is the lawyer?
Jose Baez.
Jose, you're not Jose Baez telling me that I left some kid in the park or killed. I'm here. You're not going to tell me. I'm not leaving a stink in anyone's car. They're leaving it in mine.
Well, now you're getting emotional.
You're darn right I'm emotional. I'm not getting out of someone's sunbird and leaving the smell of goat in it. They're leaving it mine.
Because you hired to do the job and you got there and she was too fat and you had to leave. That's their fault. They leave the smell in your car.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes. Yes. Yes.
877-876-PHIL. What do you think about a wedding photographer who shows up, you hire him to photograph your wedding, your reception? He shows up and you, your husband-to-be, your wife-to-be, whoever, you're not good enough. You don't look good enough. He turns around and he leaves. 877-877-PHIL. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our next hour, of course, is our News and Information Hour, and we have with us Art Griego, who is a wedding photographer. Wedding Portraits by Art has been in business now for the last year. And we're talking about a very unusual business practice here, Art. You're saying that your business is down, the economy is bad, you're struggling like all other businesses, and yet you're turning business away. And that's the bottom line here.
The bottom line is I'm struggling like any other business, and we are asking for stimulus help from a government that is very happy to give it to large auto industries, happy to give it to every other nonsensical and ridiculous idea. They want to build a bridge to, I heard about a bridge to nowhere. I don't know what that is. Why are we not allowed what we want? I don't know.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Marilyn. Marilyn in Los Angeles. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Yes, Phil. I'm familiar with Mr. Griego. How are you?
I don't know that I remember you, ma'am.
Well, you were hired to photograph my wedding.
Okay.
You remember her?
Well, her.
Hold on. Mr. Henry, this is Marilyn Donnelly. I am pre-surgical. I present as a woman, but I am a transgender.
I see, okay.
And I was recently married, and I hired this man.
Mr. Henry, if I could jump.
Please, allow me. I hired this man, and I can tell you, Mr. Henry, that I take yoga, that I am at least three times a week in the gym, that I don't weigh a pound over 123 pounds, that I'm tall.
Yeah, why'd you tell him how tall?
Excuse me, I'm tall.
Okay, so you're still technically male.
I present as a woman.
Okay, you're pre-surgical, you're about to have your surgery?
Yes.
Can I say something here, Phil? I walked into this wedding and, you know...
Well, all right, Marilyn is saying she's not fat.
When you say she...
That when she says she's not fat and she's not big and she doesn't have the thick neck...
Okay, you're right. I turn the corner and I always like to turn a corner. I never want to come straight on. I want to turn a corner. And first of all, I had a very hard time finding a corner to turn. And I kept asking, there were people, I said, is there a corner I can turn to see? I don't want to just walk straight in. I finally turn a corner, and I see this big, tall, and I didn't know what it was. How dare you?
What does that mean?
It means 6'3",
and he refused to take our pictures, so he's a bigot.
No, ma'am, I'm not.
He's a bigot. He's an ignoramus, and I thought you should know.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Thank you very much, Phil. I enjoy your program.
Thank you, Marilyn. 877-876-PHIL.
Are you going to let that stand?
You admitted to going to this wedding, and you admitted to turning around and leaving that wedding. The woman, she presents as a woman. She's about to have her surgery. She's transgender. She wasn't fat. You refused to take the pictures. That's on you. Here is Amber. Amber, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Art Griego. Go ahead, please.
All right, so... You say that you're eating out of a can, but you're the one turning away the work. You've obviously got plenty of weddings booked. Do your job, and you wouldn't have money to eat.
No, it doesn't work like that. You just heard the last lady. I turned the corner, and I got a transgender, I don't know what it is. If I take a
but
picture of
But what difference
of that,
does that make? If you're going to be paid for the job, do your job, and then you'll live fine. That doesn't make any sense.
I'll be haunted forever by the image of that. That's number one. And number two, I can't take that to Modern Bride and say, here's a, how do you like this, Modern Bride? A transgender 6'3" freak.
Oh, man, are you an ass.
You are absolutely ridiculous. You're disgusting. You won't take pictures of transgender people. Who cares? Just do your job. You're a photographer, right? Take the pictures.
Yes, I am. I'm a damn good photographer. I wish there was something I could take a picture of. That's how good I am. I am so good. I wish to God.
If you're so good, you would have already sold something to Modern Bride.
I can't find a hot.
You can't find a hot-looking bride. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I was hoping for the Crystal Harris job.
Oh, you and a million other guys, man. Are you kidding me? You know,
you
have to, if there's...
disgusting.
Ma'am, why am I disgusting when the Crystal Harris job would have put me over the top? And what do you think that thing did? She dumps Hefner, is having an affair with some guy that parks cars.
That's none of your business, man. That's none of your business. What happens? They don't have to get married
especially
to keep you in business.
You're a photographer. If you would take the pictures, you would be able to eat fine. This just doesn't make any sense to me.
I can't take
You obviously have work.
I am an artist, Amber, and I'm sure you understand, being an artist, when I turn the corner and I see a woman who has the big... She's got masculine shoulders. All the air goes out of me. All of my dreams...
You know, you sound like a very weak man.
What is that supposed to mean?
You sound like a man that you can't really take life's highs and lows. You just, every little thing is going to screw you up.
Mr. Henry, if you walked into your radio studio every day and there was no microphone, how would you feel?
Don't give me that bull crap, man. This is not equivalent to that. Hey, listen,
no,
thank you, Amber.
You have a camera. You're choosing not to use it.
But Mr. Hendry is choosing not to go buy a new microphone. Oh, forget it. You guys don't understand.
You're an idiot. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Our news and comment hour, coming up next. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Phil Hendry.
I'm eating out of a can. Thanks, Phil.